Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Bin Laden and his family were found on the second and third floor of the building. There was concern that Bin Laden would oppose the capture operation,
yeah.
And indeed he did resist. In the room with Bin Laden, a woman, Bin Laden's wife, rushed the U.S. assaulter and was shot in the leg but not killed. Bin Laden was then shot and killed.
So that's the best that they can do. I mean, you have a wonderful victory like this, a swift sword to the head of the snake of Al-Qaeda, and now we have a bumbling idiot spokesmouth who can't even get the script that they gave him correct. So you wonder why conspiracy theories are already popping up. The media has moved on, by and large, truthfully. By the way, this is the Savage Nation. You haven't joined in on what we used to call a party line. You're not hearing the show coming in on a dental filling from Mars. My name is Michael Savage. It's a radio show heard on over 300 stations across America. We are talking about one of the greatest military victories of our time, which is the Navy SEALs killing the arch terrorist, the Hitler of our time, Osama bin Laden. And yet, less than 48 hours after this great victory, the media is already beginning to move on. You scan the cable news channels, and you can see them switching already to the latest celebrity starlet who just came out of rehab or puked on her shoes in Hollywood. Baseball, goofballs, personal finance. But Bin Laden and the war on radical Islam, the amazing performance of the Navy SEALs and the threat still posed to America by radical Islam is somehow being shoved into the background. So the question is why? Why is the media moving on? Well, first of all, the media is ever eager to supplicate before Obama, and all of a sudden they're moving past Obama's greatest achievement. So why? Well, I thought about it. My conclusion is that it could be that the American public reacted with such jubilance, such triumph at the news that our greatest enemy had been killed by American SEALs, that the left-wing fanatic media became frightened. They were afraid of the nationalism that was occurring. They were afraid that once the Americans were awakened to the true reality of the threats of radical Islam, the people would demand that the door be shut to all Muslims coming in from the Middle East, that all immigration be stopped for one, and that too much of a love for the military is just too much for the media. There's another possibility as well from my way of thinking, and that's this. It's purely financial. The media, as you well know, is now interlocked between the news and entertainment. We tried to stop it 20 years ago, but to no avail. Money talked and the rest of us walked. We tried to prevent news groups from being bought out by movie-producing companies, but it didn't matter. And so the fanatics who own these media giants realized that there were so many stories about the death of Osama bin Laden that they were not really able to sell the usual stream of idiotic movies, books, and pharmaceuticals and male enhancement products. You see, when America's thinking about the death of bin Laden and they're inspired with nationalism and patriotism, it's very difficult to sell a movie about some idiot chasing after a slut. When America's swelling with national pride, it's harder to sell someone on a get-rich-quick scheme. And when America is called to its better self, it's very hard to sell drugs that cast people into mental oblivion. You see, the media, owned by a few hands that control the news and entertainment, want to sell their products. And to do so, they need to keep you stupid, depressed, and distracted. And so, therefore, a news cycle that highlights victory could not be allowed to last too long. Well, whatever the reason, the media has declared an end to our national celebration. It will flare up again shortly when Osama's death photos will be shown. There'll be another flurry of interest, and people will start conspiring. Is it real? Blah, 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 blah. But as expected, the president, rightly so, got a tremendous spike. as a result of this great victory by the U.S. Navy SEALs. It's the way it works. It happens with all presidents, but it doesn't mean anything in the long run. 18 months is a very, very long time from now. And I'm sure that unless he fixes the economy, this is not going to help him very much in the long run. He's going to have to kill one of them every few months, and I hope he does so, frankly. 1-800-449-8255. We're getting a late report on what Osama bin Laden liked to drink. And we have the report right now. Quote from Bloomberg News. The two polite Pakistanis who helped Osama bin Laden hide in the shadow of their country's army bought bulk food orders, chose major brands, and equally favored Pepsi and Coke, neighbors and a local shopkeeper said. At least he liked American soft drinks. Let's see. Bin Laden's men never came by foot. They always drove a Pajero or a little Suzuki van, and they bought enough food for 10 people. Blah, blah, blah. So we know that he liked soft drinks, and we know which soft drinks that he liked. And it says, Bin Laden's protectors always bought the best brands, Nestle milk, the good quality soaps and shampoos. They always paid cash, never asked for credit. They purchased meat from a butcher nearby who stayed closed yesterday. Would you like to know more? The good news is that the CIA, through the U.S. commando team, collected a huge cache of materials from the compound, computers, electronics. And Michael Scheuer, the CIA veteran who led the agency's hunt for bin Laden in 90, said it would be a surprise to find that the Al-Qaeda leader of Saudi had relied on foreigners like the Khans for his innermost security, whatever that means. Nevertheless, you want to talk about it. I know many of you are anxious to tell us what you heard this morning on other radio shows and make believe you just made it up. Or you can call me about questions or answers to other questions or problems. Why do you think the media moved on, by and large, from one of the greatest military victories of modern times? I think that's a very good question. Remember what I said at the beginning of the show today. This media is in love with Obama. No matter what they say, they're slavish worshippers. They're an arm of the Obama administration. And yet they're already moving away from it. And what they did was they said, wait a minute, we can glorify it, but then we're going to glorify nationalism and patriotism and the military, and we hate the country and we hate the military and we teach our children not to fight back. So I tell you what, we're going to have to do a trade deal here. We're not going to glorify Obama because therefore the people are liable to get the right idea about radical Islam and demand something be done about it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, one great part of this story is that the military's reinvigorated. I would believe that the enlistment numbers for young men who want to go into the SEALs is going to be off the charts. You know how few can actually make it. You understand. You've seen the shows. But that's good. The more young men we have who are willing to kill for the nation, the better. So the Obama aide said bin Laden was not armed when killed. They've already changed the story. First, he was armed and resisted. Then they said he was, in the beginning, the initial claim said that bin Laden had used a woman believed to be his wife as a human shield. The updated version says a woman, bin Laden's wife, rushed the U.S. assault, do you hear, and was shot in the leg but not killed. I mean, why don't they tell us Lassie was in there and tried to rescue him? Bin Laden was then shot and killed. He was not armed. How could you believe bin Laden was not armed? Every person I know has a gun. How could bin Laden himself not have a gun? Could you explain this to me? He hears a helicopter landing on his roof. He hears shots on the floor below him. Men are screaming. Women are dying. Machine guns are going off. And he's not armed. Does that make sense to you? I don't want to suddenly join the deathers now, but for God's sakes, the whole story doesn't make sense now. I know mild-mannered accountants who have guns by their bedside. I know doctors, lawyers, accountants, unemployed, poets with guns. I know doctors and farmers and housewives. Everyone has a gun next to their bed in the United States of America. And bin Laden, the worst terrorist on the planet, the man who he had no weapon. How is this possible? I mean, now I'm starting to say something's wrong with this picture. A woman rushed the Navy SEALs, you hear? She rushed the Navy SEALs, was shot in the leg. Ah! Okay, you know, now it's already going to turn into comedy. Now it's going to already be comedy. Incidentally, yesterday I had a caller from a man who said that he was an Orthodox Jewish man. And he said to me, you should not rejoice when your enemy falls. I said, no, you're wrong. I said, you're 100% wrong. He said, but that's what the boys in the yeshiva are learning, that you shouldn't rejoice when your enemy falls. I said, hey, look. I said, why don't you stop with this hogwash? I said, you're wrong. I said, maybe if instead of going to Israel and just sitting there and praying, you were forced to join the military, maybe you'd also rejoice when your enemy fell. So I got an email now from a rabbi. Before you shoot your mouth off and send a letter to the ADL about me, this just came to me. As a rabbi in Jerusalem, originally from Santa Monica, he said, I just want to tell you that what you said about rejoicing when one's enemy falls is exactly right. Savage, the Talmud is clear that it is proper to rejoice when one's enemy falls in battle. And it's from the Babylonian Talmud, Megillah 16a. And he qualifies the verse in Proverbs 24, which says, quote, when your enemy falls, do not rejoice. But that means a person of your own nation who is your enemy, but not when that person is a foreigner out to destroy your people. He then goes on and says, I think that we all understand on a gut level that when a fellow American commits a crime and is put to death, we are faced with a national failure in a way, for our nation was responsible for producing that person, and therefore rejoicing is less appropriate. But Savage, you deserve to know that your thoughts are reflected in the Talmud and that the wise men several thousand years ago agreed with you. Thanks for being a voice of reason. That really was it came out of the blue because I was sure when I saw it from a rabbi he was going to attack me. The word rabbi only means teacher. That's all it means. It doesn't mean, what does the word teacher mean in America? It can mean inspired. It can mean insipid. It's the same with holy men. How could an imam call himself a holy man as this the head of the imam from the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem came out and said, the killing of a lion. Anything like that? Not in my country, it wouldn't be. What would happen if a priest got up and started calling for death and killing? Or a rabbi got up in a synagogue, death and killing? Or a Buddhist monk, death and killing? The FBI would have microphones in their bowels. The FBI would have a microphone in their cereal bowl in the morning. But if an imam gets up and starts calling for the death of the president, what is this country? What is this world that we're putting up with this rubbish? To me, a religion teaches peace, or it's not a religion worth anything. If it is a religion, it teaches how to get along with your neighbor, and it teaches peace. Otherwise, it's not a religion. It's a political warfare machine disguised in a robe. And I'm not alone in my viewpoint. I'm sick of this. Okay, so what do you want to talk about? Any topic is fair game. Let's go to Ben in New York on WOR. Ben, you're on the Savage Nation.
We should have had a public post-mortem in, let's say, the Armed Forces Pathological Institute, one of those large operating theaters where they could invite the world press, could have had guest pathologists conducting it from all over the world, and have not just conclusive DNA, but what might be described as gross anatomical evidence.
What do you mean, like cut off his arm?
No. I'm talking fingerprints, dimensions, scars, all
that. And why didn't they bring the body back to America and put it on display?
They made a grave mistake because it gives ammunition to the conspiracy theorists.
No, but let's play this out together since we're intelligent people talking about it. When I heard he was dead, I said, thank God. I was looking forward to him. I wanted to see his body on display with his head shot off. I personally wanted to see proof, number one. But I also wanted to see this pure evil killed. I thought it would send a great message to the other little mini-me's. So the question is, why didn't they do it?
Did expedience over what was proper.
Do you think they made a mistake?
I think it was a purposeful mistake to try to end things in quotes very quickly and then go on to something else.
Now they're facing all sorts of questions from around the world. Did they really kill him? Is he really dead? Why don't you release the photo? So they've opened up this can of worms.
Exactly. It's called unintended consequences, if you will.
Ben, what can I ask you something, Ben? What was your field of endeavor, or what was or is your profession?
Several different ones. Call me a historian.
Okay, that's fair enough. Call me a teacher. This is the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Any topic is fair. David, I'd like to hear what you have to say about the whole picture, because many of you, of course, have had time to think about it. You've listened to analysis. You've read various newspapers and opinions, and you have something you want to say. There's something bubbling in you that you haven't heard yet, but just do me a favor. Don't call the screener with something you heard on another radio show, because we probably have talked about it. If you have something original to add to this discussion, wouldn't it be great? Okay? Texas, Aaron, you're next up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Okay, he dropped, so let's go to let's go across the country, to be fair. Don in Indianapolis, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Michael, I expect the reason the media wants to move on is because this is the first time in a long time that the U.S. has defended her sovereignty and hasn't required a unilateral passage by the U.N., in some Security Council resolution to act decisively, to be swift, certain, and severe, and the media can't stand that.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. That's a very good analysis. But you do concur with me that there's a concerted effort to sort of move this story off the headlines for a number of reasons that I've elaborated. I'm shocked by it, frankly. This should be front page for weeks on end. This is a momentous story. Momentous. And if I were running the show, I would have brought him back to America and put his corpse on display. Remember what the Italians did to Mussolini after World War II? They were they hated him and his mistress so badly, the partisans hung him upside down like a slab of meat. The human being is not purely a rational organism. The human being is also an emotional organism with very deep needs for revenge. And we need that revenge, frankly, and we didn't get it. I don't think we're going to get it in this aseptic, modernistic world that we're living in to begin with, and especially when we have a far-left liberal PC government. But nevertheless, again, I am still saluting Obama for having called the shot and saying, you know, shoot that gun and kill him. He could have said don't, like Clinton did. Clinton chickened out. Remember that.
Savage.
There is the requirement in Islamic law that individual be buried within 24 hours. Went inside of Pakistan, carried out the operation, he was killed, he was removed from Pakistan. There were certain steps that had to be taken because of the nature of the operation. We wanted to make sure we were able to do that in the time period allotted for it. Going to another country, making those arrangements, requirements, would have exceeded that time period in our view. And so therefore we thought that the best way to ensure that his body was given an appropriate Islamic burial was to take those actions that would allow us to do that burial at sea.
John, did you consult a Muslim expert?
We consulted the appropriate specialists and experts, and there was unanimity that this would be the best way to handle that.
Okay. We're all so sensitive to Hitler. Hitler? Maybe Hitler should have been given a Christian burial by the armed forces in World War II, even though he wasn't a Christian, even though he was a cultist, a mad drug addict and mad cultist who didn't believe in God or Jesus. Well, nevertheless, you have to respect, the Nazis, you know, give them a nice burial. So why didn't he have a weapon? Now it's come out Osama seemed to be reaching for a weapon before being shot. Does that make sense to you? The helicopter lands on the roof of your house. You hear shots on the first floor, people screaming and dying. They're screaming and yelling and guns and flashbang grenades, and he didn't reach for a gun? Okay, now it's starting to get crazy. Now it's starting to get already crazy now. This is awful, what's going on, I'll tell you. I just want to believe in something already. I may as well just start believing in Christmas and Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck, for God's sakes. All right, let's take the callers. Chicago, Scott, you're on the Savage Nation.
The reason the media has moved on is because they understand and realize the death of Bin Laden doesn't mean anything. Islamic fundamentalism will never stop, and they know they'll have to be engaged in this war forever and ever and ever. That's why, Dr. Savage.
Well, wait a minute. Why would the media suddenly move apart from a story that has glorified Obama? It makes Obama look good, and they're on in Obama's court. That doesn't make sense.
They don't. I mean, what the Israelis already know, and that is these people will never stop. And if they give too much attention to it, the American people will realize it's something we're going to have to be engaged in forever.
Maybe we shouldn't bring more of them in from the Middle East or from Somalia. Maybe it was an error bringing them in. Is that what they're afraid of? They'll start looking upon them as dangerous potential strangers? Yeah, okay, yeah, like who's in your rearview mirror? I mean, don't let the people get that thought. Philadelphia, Kevin, thank you for calling. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I think it was a mistake giving Osama the dignity, if you will, of a Muslim burial. I mean, this whole mission was about sending a message to these people of strength that we're not messing around anymore. And then at the end, it seems like you're kind of conceding or trying to be sympathetic to them.
Well, so their point of view is we've got to show that we're better than them. Otherwise, we're the same as them. You know, if we used a nuke, for example, on a large body of terrorists and killed thousands of innocent people, how different would we be than them? So therefore, we got to show we're superior to them. That's the thinking inside the liberal White House. Well, this is not 1944, 45. You know, it's a different world. These people were all brainwashed in Eastern liberal colleges where they were taught not to hit, not to fight, not to kill, not to murder. And now they're facing the reality of what they've gotten themselves into as leaders of the country. And they're learning they have to hit and kill and murder. So they're trying to do it while walking on eggshells.
I understand. Can I say something for a second?
Yeah, sure.
If it was up to me, honestly, I would have sent the footage to Al Jazeera with the message, this is what happens when you mess with us, or something along those lines.
I don't like Al Jazeera. I don't like that propaganda channel in my country. I find it offensive, to be honest with you. I find it very offensive that C-SPAN, a public broadcasting outlet, would run Al Jazeera News, which is nothing but anti-American propaganda and hatred in my country. I find it offensive. I'm not interested in the Arab street. Let them be interested in the American street. That's my opinion. Let them worry about what we're thinking. So there it is. Now let's take some more calls. This is your day. I mean, I knew that you're going to want to vent. You know, I mean, there's lots of other stories, you know, and it's good. We're going to talk about this till they show the picture. Director Barry Levinson in talks to direct the Gotti biopic. Rain Man director Barry Levinson is in talks to replace fire director Nick Cassavetes on the upcoming movie Gotti Three Generations. How exciting. See, I told you, when you got a company that owns Fox Searchlight and Fox News and Fox Entertainment, you can only talk about Osama bin Laden so long because you can't sell anything. I mean, there's no Osama bin Laden T-shirts for sale on the New York Post website, so they have to push you into some of their products somehow. The news we're getting today is very much a mixed product. You understand that? All right, look, everyone's got to make a living. There's nothing wrong with that. Can I tell you? Oh, I want to take a quick side diversion for a minute. As we're talking about the death of Osama bin Laden, I must tell you the side story. It's a rivulet. And the reason I'm going to risk telling you the rivulet is because I'm famous for digressions, and my digressions are often the better part of the show. And my dog just yawned. He loved hearing that. He felt the calmness come over the studio. I was, you know, I'm an older guy, and I have two mature children, okay? I raised the children. And I know certain things about raising children. So I had forgotten most of what went on. My son was up and just happened to be here for this great news, and we've been talking about it for 2 days before he went home. And then we started reminiscing about his childhood, and I don't know how it came up, but he said, hey, Dad, you know what came back to me? I said, what? Now, remember, he's a grown man. He said, you know why I don't smoke? I said, no, I don't remember. He said, do you remember when I was a little kid around 8, 9, or 10? We were in San Francisco, and you said to me, I saw somebody smoking, and I thought it looked great. And he said, you saw me looking at the guy smoking, and something registered in your mind, and you said to me, hey, would you like to try a cigarette? And I said, sure. And he said, you went to a machine and you bought a pack of Lucky Strikes unfiltered and you lit the cigarette for me and you gave it to me. And he said, I inhaled it. I almost died. He said, I almost puked. I got sick from it. He said, I never, ever put a cigarette to my mouth again. And he said, I got to tell you something else, Dad. He said, the same thing was done with me with alcohol. He said, you gave me a scotch when I was young. He said, I spit it out. He said, I drink, but really, I really don't like the taste of alcohol. I said, I had no idea. He said, yeah, thank you for that. So I'm passing it on because there's a lot of young fathers out there who are looking for tips on how to raise children and keep them away from alcohol, keep them away from cigarettes. You want to keep them away from drugs? Keep them away from cigarettes. Don't believe what the liberals tell you. Cigarettes are a gateway to marijuana. Marijuana is the number one gateway drug to every other drug in the cornucopia of drug usage. Trust me on that one. Okay? Trust me on that one. I don't need some expert from Harvard who's so screwed up that he can only teach at Harvard to tell me what's right or wrong. I'm telling you, cigarettes are a gateway to marijuana, and marijuana is a gateway to every other drug, and don't call me on any of these topics. 1-800-449-8255. I'd like to take some calls on Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden, the boogeyman is dead. The boogeyman is dead. The boogeyman is dead. You don't have to hide under your bed. So now where's the next boogeyman going to come from? Ooh, where is he from? They're going to have to find a villain who's a Christian right-winger soon in order to balance this out. They're going to have to go after some militia member somewhere up in Montana or Utah. They're going to have to show they're just as dangerous to the world, that they don't pick on Muslims. That's coming next. Virginia Rita, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you made a brilliant statement yesterday. I'm an American Muslim, and I heard you say you wouldn't dignify bin Laden as to bury him as a Muslim. And that's a brilliant statement, because I wouldn't bury him as a Muslim either. He was the first to distort the Islamic religion around the world.
I think so, and I'm not a Muslim, but to me, why? You said it better than me, but I'll repeat what I said, basically. Why dignify him by wrapping him in the very religion that he perverted?
Exactly.
And moreover, my analysis is that he was a psychopath and a mass murderer first, and the Muslim element was used to justify his psychopathology.
Exactly. I agree.
Right? And I really wish more Muslims who are in the middle of the road here would call the show, because they are the ones who actually had more to fear from these fanatics, still do. How many years have I said the same thing? I'm the most misinterpreted man in radio. I've said on the show for over 10 years that the acquaintances I know, for example, from Morocco, Muslims, you wouldn't know they're a Muslim anymore. You know the next man's a Christian or a Jew in America, because most people don't wear their religion on their sleeve, okay? They practice their faith. They keep it to themselves. And it's in a moderate way. He said to me, as a Muslim, he said, we lost 30,000 people from the radical Muslims here in our country. I said, I know that. I know that your people were blown up and decimated by these radical fanatics who want to drag you back 1,000 years. See, I understand this, Rita. I understand all of this. It's lost in all of the excitement over this.
Yes, sir. And I wanted to say that apart from all the innocent lives that have been lost, we were the first ones also to get hurt by this.
Like, where? In which country? You mean in the countries that I'm mentioning, such as Morocco?
I am originally from Morocco. I'm an American, and I'm originally from Morocco. And, for example, every time I would go to Morocco, I used to get selected for, like, tour research at the airport. And that's all due to this ideology and this terrorism that happened here in the States.
I see. Yes, it was in North Africa, I think, that most of this horrendous, these attacks occurred in very early on. I wouldn't say the first. So, yeah, the middle of the road, shall I say, the leave me alone Muslim, who's not a fanatic, has the most to lose from these fanatics. So having said all of this, do you feel a lot better today that he's dead?
I feel much, much better. I didn't know how to express my joy when I heard the news, seriously.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? I tell you, I felt the relief come over me. Of course this is going to go on, but don't you think it also sends a very powerful signal to the other wannabes that they're going to be targeted for death?
Dr. Savage, it's not me alone who does this. I know many, many Muslims here. They're friends of mine, and they were very, very, very happy to hear the news.
Well, I'm so glad you listened to me. Where do you listen on WTNT in Washington?
No, I'm in Norfolk, VA. It's 7:90 a.m. I don't even know.
Well, as long as you know the call letters, let me send you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Stay in the line. I'll be right back. Now, here's a curious side note that I've come up with. We were told through many years that there were no internet connections. Osama bin Laden was using couriers and basically carrier pigeons. There was no way to find out what he was doing, what he was planning. There was no hookup, no electronic devices, no internet. Now we're learning that in his fortress-like villa in Pakistan, it was equipped with both electronic devices and internet connections. So now the question to you is, why did the United States and Pakistan, who must have known where he was hiding since they had his internet connections, not lay hands on him sooner? Why was May 1st, 2011 chosen for the operation? You see, the timing is a big issue. You've got to understand something. In addition to being a talk show host, which I am, and I have been for many years, I'm now a novelist as well. I mean, I've been a writer all my life, but wait till you see my spy novel that comes out. I call it a spy novel. I call it a thriller in September from St. Martin's called Abuse of Power. I also have a mind that can stretch itself. In other words, I have a great imagination. Now, sometimes this gets me in trouble, I admit. And sometimes it can take you far afield from reality. However, I'm rooted in reality and that I'm trained in hard science. I'm not just a fantasist. I try to balance the two. I try to know exactly what's real and then use some of my abilities to think, as it were, or fantasize, because thinking is fantasizing. The difference between fantasizing and thinking, this is a whole discussion I can have for another time. The difference between pure fantasy and logical thinking is based, one is based upon no facts or a semblance of loose facts, and the other is based upon hard evidence, okay, to make it very simple. So I'm asking a very simple question. First, we were told he had no hookup, no internet, no devices. We can't find him. We don't know where he is. He uses couriers, and 18 guys go on muleback, camelback, horseback. They're running into Waziristan, Daristan, Hiristan, Mayastan, Uristan, Mylantan, and they don't know where he is, so you can't find him. Now we find out he was hooked up to the internet. But didn't they say they took away hard drives and computers and a trove of information? You know and I know that you can hack into any computer in the world. Look at WikiLeaks. So how, somebody hacked into Osama bin Laden's computers. So why did they wait so long if they hacked into it so long ago? So you want me to get involved in this? No, I just got involved. That's all. There it is. Something's wrong with the picture. Already something's wrong with it. And I don't know quite where to go with this. On the one hand, great. On the other hand, something's wrong. The guy had up-to-date electronic technology, which opened up the six-year-old building to outside intelligence penetration and surveillance. The man also suffered from a kidney disease. He was dependent on dialysis treatment, as we all know, and dependent on outside medical care. And what? He went to the hospital and we didn't know anything about it? So he occupies a large three-story compound. It's stuck out in the skyline of the Pakistani garrison town of Abbottabad, 120 clicks from Islamabad. It towered over neighboring buildings. Children were paid off to stay away from the building. If one of their balls bounced over the fence, they were given a lot of money by the guards to not come and look for the ball. So we kept hearing repeated statements by U.S. officials that Navy SEAL special op took place without Pakistani intelligence. Do you believe that? I don't believe that. I don't believe any of the story at this point, other than he's dead. But I'll tell you, if this goes on any longer, they're going to turn a man like me, who has saluted the president, into a doubter. Something is wrong with the picture already. Something is wrong with the picture already. And when we hear John Brennan already, the head of Homeland Security, and not the head, he's Homeland Security and Counterterrorism, somebody, bigwig, he starts already changing the story. And he says that a large quantity of docs were seized in the villa and were being checked, and so forth and so on. So already the questions are going to arise. So it's leading us to start to doubt the president, not to the fact that the arch terrorist is actually dead. But I don't see how the president could take credit for something as momentous as this and not produce evidence, because the longer he doesn't produce the evidence, the more the doubts will grow. So I'm looking forward to the pictures, you know. Salt Lake City, Robert, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, we're celebrating the death of bin Laden, talking a lot about him, but he's gone. The one that we should be talking about is Hal Zawahiri, who I believe is the more dangerous of the two, and very few people are talking about him. He's not even on the FBI 10 most wanted list.
And why is what? Wait, hold on. I know who he is. He's the surgeon doctor from Egypt,
and he's a
fanatical madman, but why would you say he's more dangerous?
Well, because I think he's the mastermind behind 9/11, And he also was the mastermind behind the Sadat assassination. I really believe he's the guy that planned it, and bin Laden's the figurehead. But this is the guy who I really believe is the most dangerous of the two.
And, but isn't he on the list? Isn't he the next on the most wanted list? I thought he was.
If you look at the FBI top 10, I looked at it this morning. He is not on it. Bin Laden's on it, and it shows his picture that says deceased. But al-Zawahiri is not on it.
And who is number two?
I don't remember, but, you know, Ray Bolger and a few other people, but I don't remember. But bin Laden was the only one, and al-Zawahiri is not. And I really believe he's the more dangerous of the two, and nobody's talking about him.
Mm-hmm. Well, you raise a good point, where he's hiding and all of that. But again, if we see that Osama bin Laden's compound was wired to the teeth with electronics and computers, and that he was communicating via such, you have to assume that al-Zawahiri is also doing that. They're not using carrier pigeon and donkey. And so therefore, it leads us to the questions again of what are we waiting for? You know, why are we waiting so long? Pennsylvania, Walter, fire away on the Savage Nation. You've got 40 seconds.
The burial at sea is a rather economical and expedient way to get rid of them. Being in the Navy, being involved in a couple burial at sea, it's very unceremonious, and I just think as much ado about nothing burial at sea. The other point I wanted to make is seeing how much mileage the birthers got out of it. I think Obama would play this out to the hilt and not release things in dribs and drabs all the way up to the election. Keep it in.
That's another thought. He could hold this card so that the deathers, as I called them yesterday, start to appear. In other words, there's going to be a whole cottage industry now of deathers with new books coming out. Is Osama bin Laden dead? Did they really kill him? Did he ever exist? They'll say he never existed next. They'll say he was photoshopped, that they took a basketball star and put some imam on him.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Laden and his family were found on the second and third floor of the building. There was concern that bin Laden would oppose the capture operation, and indeed he did resist. In the room with bin Laden, bin Laden's wife rushed the U.S. assaulter and was shot in the leg but not killed. Bin Laden
Stop. Son, go back to junior high school and start again. You're not made for this job, number one. Who wrote this? You know, as a professional broadcaster and writer, I can tell you this story is not selling. A woman rushed the shooter and was shot in the leg. We didn't really hurt her because we're the Americans and we don't kill women. Are you kidding me? They would have blown her head off. How do they know who a woman is? Schwoman. They're in the middle of a shootout in some Islamabad hellhole with night vision goggles. They know who it is with a burqa running at them. A woman, and she wasn't armed. He was armed. He wasn't armed. I told you, every dentist I know has a gun next to his bed. I don't know anyone who doesn't have a gun next to his bed. I live in California. Everybody I know, liberals, conservatives, atheists, agnostics, gays, straights, blacks, whites, everyone I know has a gun next to their bed. I don't know anybody without a gun. I know people who are across the spectrum. Everyone has a gun, but Osama bin Laden didn't have one. You hear this? This is getting crazier by the day now. Where's the picture? That's all I want to know. Leon Panetta says public likely to see OBL picture. They're playing with us already. Likely now. They're likely to show the picture. We don't know when. We don't know how. The president's pondering it. The first lady has a few vegetables she has to plant first. After she plants an eggplant and talks it over with her mother, they'll have another conference The president's busy with basketball. He'll be back. As soon as he's back, we'll let you know about the picture. This will go on for a while. Here we go again. It's like the birth certificate now. So I hope that another billionaire doesn't appear and demand to see the long-form death certificate. That's all I can say. That's all I can see, you know. 1-800-449-8. If you want to vent today on the Savage Nation, believe me, there's a lot to vent about. As you well know, although the show appears late in the day across America, it's probably listened to by very important thinking people in the country. That's my suspicion. And including government people who listen, some who maybe agree with me, some who despise me. But they want to know what you're thinking and what I'm thinking and how I'm posing things, because they've come to understand that a man with a PhD from the University of California who's written 28 books and also has had a show this popular for these years isn't to be ignored. No matter what you heard, they're not ignoring me and they're not ignoring you. So if you got something to say, spit it out. That's all. I don't want to belabor the issue of whether it was waterboarding that led to it. I think that's such a stupid argument. Again, that gets back to the Republican-Democrat. Of course, the enhanced interrogation technique, meaning torture, worked. What do you think works? Torture. What else works when you're interrogating a man as hard as these enemies are? What do you think, that they're you or me? They're hardened to withstand torture. So the only thing that they can't withstand is torture that you can hardly ever train for. You understand that? That's the only thing you can use, short of shooting your ear off. You know, Congressman Allen West, who I consider one of the greatest of Americans, almost went to jail for 7 years for doing his job as a captain in the military, which was firing a weapon next to the ear of a terrorist who was responsible for killing some of his men. And as a result of firing the gun, the enemy caved in and gave up information where the next roadside bomb or bombs were hidden. And his commanding officer tried to court-martial him and put him away for 8 years, but it was because the people couldn't believe that a general would do this to a man, that the congressman was released from this maw of the Bush administration and then the Obama administration. The fact of the matter is, only the most extreme methods work on the enemy. And thank God we have men willing to employ these methods. Thank God we still have men who know how to fight the enemy and are willing to do so, you know. That's all I can say. Now what do you have to say? Chicago, Josh, go ahead, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I want to talk to you about, you said if he had no internet, then they couldn't find him. And then they say, oh, well, he did have internet, he had all these computers. Well, why weren't we able to find him? My theory is that, you know, he did have internet and he was on it quite a bit. And they did find him probably a while ago, maybe even months or years. I think what happened is they had a bird in the sky watching his every move. Because when he dropped those towers, he first said that he didn't do it. Because just like Yamamoto, I fear all we have done is awaken a sleeping giant. So he knew that his days were numbered. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but he knew he was a dead man walking. So they had the bird in the sky watching his every move because he knows when he dies.
But why May 1st? Why a Sunday evening?
I don't know. Maybe the wedding. Obama didn't get invited. Who knows?
No, I said that yesterday, and people didn't take me seriously. I got to tell you again, Obama's a very touchy guy, as any egomaniac is, whether he be Bush or anyone who's driven to that level of success is an egomaniac. Let's start with that. Anyone in the media is an egomaniac, but anyone who goes into politics is a bigger egomaniac, and anyone who becomes a president is the biggest of the egomaniacs. So let's start with that. I'm not putting him in his own category. That's number one. Okay, so he gets snubbed by the royal family and is not invited to England, and all we heard about was the wedding, the wedding, the wedding, the wedding. It was around the clock. What knocked the wedding off the headlines? This. That's another theory I had. Do you agree with me?
Oh, I definitely agree with you. But one other thing I wanted to say is that, you know, they had to track him for a while to know that who his underlings and the leaders underneath him, he had to delegate all that power out because he knows that when he's gone, he wants them to take over. So they're, as soon as they found him, they might have found him a while ago. They're not going to kill him right away. They're going to wait and see all the people that come and go and see.
I agree with that. In other words, sure, they knew where he was because of the electronics, but they were lying by saying, oh, no, there are no electronics. There's no computer. We can't track him, right? He's using couriers. That's what we were led to believe for all these years.
That's working for them. Why would they want him to know that and then stop using the internet? It's working for the government. They don't want him to know that. They don't want him to get scared and stop using that means of messaging. They're using that.
All right, so they knew where he was. He lived there for 6 years. 6 years he lived in this blockhouse over there. And all of a sudden, we're led to believe that there was no timing involved. There was timing involved. And the question of why May 1. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I don't know. You know, Bin Laden was unarmed when SEAL stormed room. Makes no sense to me. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I don't like the government, which had this incredible victory, suddenly screwing up their victory with these lies. Why would they say he was unarmed? Do you actually believe that the number one terrorist on planet Earth did not have a weapon next to his bed? He heard a helicopter land on his roof, two helicopters, one crashed, or was shot down and then crashed on his roof. He has a firefight on the first floor. He hears men screaming and yelling, flashbang grenades, and he doesn't reach for a weapon? This is nonsense. It's starting to become nonsensical. Bin Laden was unarmed when SEALs stormed room. Associated Press, Matt Apuzzo, and Adam Goldman. What idiots come out of these journalism schools? What they're just, it's frightening. It's sick. So now the intelligence in the computer files, flash drives, DVDs and documents hauled out of the compound. All of that is in Washington. The SEALs also confiscated phone numbers from Bin Laden's body, and those might provide new leads for investigators. Blah, blah, blah. So, you know, here it is. I don't know. What are you going to talk about anymore? With officials at the CIA and the White House watching on TV monitors, tensions increased when one of the two Black Hawk helicopters that lowered into the compound fell heavily to the ground. Now listen to this nonsense. Officials believe that was due to higher than expected air temperature. You hear? A Black Hawk for the biggest mission in history. In Obama's campaign, they had a bad Black Hawk that overheated. You hear? It's unbelievable to me. The lies coming out. They shot it down. One of the guys on the roof shot it with an RPG into the exhaust funnel. What the hell is wrong with these people in the White House? They take a victory and they snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory. This is idiotic now. Somebody ought to tell them to stop the spin, because I'm not buying it. Yes, I'm a cynic. Yes, I'm a cynic. But I'm not buying any of this garbage. And if they keep it up soon, I'll become one of the deathers in a minute. This is crazy now. This is just crazy now. Pittsburgh, Annette, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm very confused about the messages that we are sending. You know, first of all, we go all commando. We go into Pakistan, not getting anybody's permission. We kill the leader of the Al-Qaeda. And then we act in fear because we're afraid of retaliation now. And we give them this wonderful burial. Makes no sense to me whatsoever.
It's because there's a schizophrenia in the Obama White House. You've got college peaceniks, egghead academics, as I call them, mixed in with the military men, and they're both fighting now for what should be done. You got the university mentality versus the military mentality, so you're getting a mixture that's schizophrenic.
I don't understand why we're afraid to show our children that evil can be overcome.
Thank you very much, right. Show children that evil, in the end, evil loses. And show the man's body mutilated with a gunshot to the head.
That's right. This is what happens. And this is America, and we are a force to be reckoned with, and we don't get all squirrely. Why are we behaving like this? It's insane.
Because you have an academic egghead in the White House. How he ever approved this is beyond me. Other than he was sinking so fast in the polls, he needed something fast. You know, let's go back for a minute. We know that he was probably under surveillance for years now. Now that we know that they knew where he lived, obviously they knew for 6 years, the government knew where he was with the computers in there and everything else. Maybe they were waiting for this for August of the election year of August 2012. Did you ever think of that?
It would make perfect sense to me.
They were just waiting. I figured we'll pull this card out after we defeat them with the Bertha thing. Then we'll do this and he'll win again. You know, but they had to do it now because he was sinking like a rock in a pond.
It's not helping. You know what? I'm hoping the American people are much smarter than that. I pray to God they are much smarter than that. But we should be demanding that we see proof. We should. It makes me stutter. I'm so aggravated.
Well, you're starting to sound like the press spokesmouth Carney, who was stuttering through his double talk. Even he couldn't keep up with the lies they were feeding him.
That's painful. painful to listen to.
Oh, it's painful to listen to this guy. Play it again.
Bin Laden and his family were found on the second and third floor of the building. There was concern that Bin Laden would oppose the capture operation, and indeed he did resist.
Indeed.
In the room with Bin Laden, Bin Laden's wife.
God, stop it. This is the spokesmouth for the President of the United States, who can't even read the lying story that they told him to read properly. It's utterly unbelievable now. It's awful. This is terrible. Jim in Texas, what do you think? Welcome to the program.
I think that we're being a little short-sighted. I think that what the president is up to is he's no longer got the birth certificate to make everybody look silly trying to object and not getting the information. So guess what? Now we're all going to be screaming, where are the pictures? Where are the videos? Show us. Does it exist? Is it real? And along about getting that August time that you were talking about, he's going to come out and show us that he's the great hero that did it all, and we're all fooled.
Well, I think it's going to be much sooner than that. I think it'll be this week, because there's now worldwide skepticism, truthfully, and Obama's credibility is on the line. I mean, the guy could become Pinocchio if he doesn't release the picture. This could be the Pinocchio presidency. Someone will steal that soon. That'll be on them. New York, Mike on WOR, go ahead.
I think that Bin Laden, we knew where Bin Laden was, and the reason why we attacked, when we attacked, was because it was to debunk anything that maybe he had in the works. Maybe he was.
You mean May 1st was chosen because Al Qaeda was about to strike somewhere in America or Europe, and this sent the message: we've got your leader. Don't do it.
Yeah, or
but wait, you know, this is all wonderful, but where do you get this surmisal from? Based on what evidence?
No evidence, just the theory.
All right. People are entitled to their theory, and theories are swirling around. And rightly so. When you have an administration that does something, meaning they didn't do it, the SEALs did it. Let's start with that again, okay? The SEALs did it, but the SEALs didn't operate in a vacuum. They operated within a governmental structure. They don't do anything without the approval of the White House. Let's be very clear about that. And he authorized this mission. He authorized the shoot to kill rules as well. Make no, so he gets credit for that. Why does he have to now diminish his own victory? Is what I'm asking. With all of this double talk that's going on around this, you know, he's dead. The devil is dead. It sent a powerful message to all the mini-me devils that are in your city right around you. You've got loads of them. They're all over the world right now. They were jumping up and down, screaming and threatening us. All of a sudden, they shut their big pie holes, didn't they? You see any of them jumping up and down in America right now, screaming, we're going to get you, America, you're dead? You don't see it because they'll be taken out next. New York, Paul, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I just read Growing Up Bin Laden, which was written by Najwa Bin Laden, his wife and first cousin, and his son, Osman Bin Laden, and it said in the book that he was never seen without his AK-47. It was always kept by his side since his days of being a mujahideen.
Why would they say he was unarmed? Why would they come up with a story that he was unarmed? First of all, it doesn't make the SEALs look very good. So why would they say that if it's not true?
It clearly must not be true because it's the character that he was portrayed as by.
Well, let's assume that it is true for a minute. Let's assume it's not true. Why would they say it was that he didn't have a gun? It makes the SEALs look bad.
No idea.
Well, maybe they want to make the SEALs look bad. Did you ever think that the academic egghead branch of the government now wants to smear the SEALs and say they shot an unarmed man? Maybe they want the SEALs to be dragged into the world court for killing an unarmed, poor, peaceful Muslim. Maybe that's their intention. Do we have any idea what's going on in the schizophrenic White House? I don't anymore. They have one victory, and all of a sudden they destroy it with all of this confusion they're sending out to the world with a double talk. Is it any wonder people are skeptical about the whole situation? 1-800-449-8255. All these stories and more when I return right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It was a very gutsy decision by the president, made by the president. I mean, he could have set some Hellfire missiles in there and destroyed everybody and everything. He didn't do this.
Wait a minute. It was a gutsy decision? You mean he... Come on, Diane. It was a gutsy act on the part of the SEALs. That's the gutsy part of it. Of course they could have fired a Hellfire missile and killed everyone in the compound. But the guts go to the guys who actually did the killing, not the guy who pressed the button or would have pressed the button. Come on already. This is now I'm starting to get bored. Okay, here's L.A. Times. Just can't. Bin Laden's sea burial fuels conspiracy theories. Here we go. You want to go into this now? Bin Laden's sea burial fuels conspiracy theories. So now let's go down to the story. L.A. Times just came out. You ready for this one? Conspiracy theorists on both left and right were quick to consist that Bin Laden was either still alive or had been dead for years, pouncing on the government's decision to slide the body of the world's most wanted man off a board into the Arabian Sea. As blogs hum with allegations that the Obama administration had faked the middle-of-the-night raid, the Bin Laden death hoax threatened to replace questions about Obama's citizenship as the latest internet rumor to go viral. Cindy Sheehan, remember that pest? You remember Cindy Sheehan? The 15 minutes of fame pest, the anti-war pest? She suddenly popped up from the mud again, and she said on her Facebook page, "I'm sorry, but if you believe the newest death of OBL, you're stupid. Just think to yourself. They paraded Saddam's dead sons around to prove they were dead. Why do you suppose they hastily buried this version of OBL at sea?" And then the more people, you know, are going on and on with this, blah, blah, blah. Even a relative of one of the victims of the 9/11 attacks voiced skepticism, citing the burial at sea. She said, "Is it true or false? I don't know," said Stella Olander of Chicago, whose daughter Christine died at the World Trade Center. She said, "To me, that seems strange that they disposed of it, and no one besides whoever was right there knows what happened." So here we go now, the conspiracy theories of the burial on the Arabian Sea. And you want to join in on them? Go, because I know this is coming anyway. I've tried to avoid it now for a day, but I could see it's impossible. It's impossible. Go ahead. Go ahead. Give me a call now. Let's get into it. Albany, Linda, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please, out of Albany, New York.
Yes, Michael. I'm calling in response to the caller who stated that the burial at sea was no big deal. We're talking about Osama bin Laden, not Joe Blow, who happened to die at sea. This was the most wanted man in the world.
Yeah.
And they killed him on land, dumped him at sea, out of what they are calling respect to the Muslims. Well, the only time that it's appropriate to bury a Muslim at sea is when he dies at sea.
No, I know that. I know. But then you hear the other side of it. They don't want to bury him on the ground because it'll become a shrine. And there was no country that wanted to take him. I heard all of that the first day. But I don't know. You know, the minute I heard of it, I celebrated. Then I said they buried him at sea. Immediately my skeptical mind shot off a message to me saying, uh-oh, watch out. And then I said, look, let's give Obama credit for doing something right. But now as this drags on and I hear the spokesmouth stumbling on the script they gave him, I'm starting to doubt this government again.
Absolutely. Well, the thing of it is, too, Michael, they had five strategic meetings before this was done. You mean to tell me no one in that meeting knew that this wasn't a respectful thing to do?
But why would they say he has no gun? That's the part that makes no sense to me. Every picture of Osama bin Laden was with an AK-47. That's number one. And as I said, not jokingly, every dentist I know has a gun next to his bed.
Maybe they.
I'm going to believe the world's number one terrorist didn't have a gun? Why would they say that?
Well, maybe they mistook the gun for the walking stick.
No, this is crazy. This is nonsense. Two helicopters land, one crashes, there's firefights going on in your house, and you don't reach for the gun next to your bed? This is starting to get crazier by the minute. This administration better get their act together very quickly, and they better release a videotape, never mind a still. See, when I heard burial at sea, okay, skeptic. Then I said they're going to have to show the videotape. But even that, they're going to show a videotape of what? A body being slid into the sea? It couldn't be a dummy? I'm sorry. I want to see the corpse. I want to see a picture. They showed Saddam Hussein in his death, the death mask. It was horrible, frankly, what they did to Saddam Hussein. It was disgusting. To be honest with you, it was horrible what they did to him. They made me have sympathy for a mass murderer. They humiliated him at the hangman's noose. They tortured him. And then they hung him and they showed the world. I mean, they really humiliated Saddam. Then they killed his sons. They showed you those pictures. So why all of a sudden are they holding back this picture? They're playing with us again. So you want to talk about this? 1-800-449-8255. You do know that May 1st was the same death that Hitler killed himself. You know that. I don't think it had anything to do with this decision, by the way. But you should know that. I mean, I saw that in the first day as a story as well. You know. Sacramento, Steve, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hello, Dr. Savage. I think that the president picked that time in particular in history to send a message to the Ahmadinejad and to Gaddafi: we will come to your house and kill you in front of your family. It was as an old style hit. Now, this was made for television, and we're going to see it eventually. And you're right; they are playing with us. We'll leak it out slowly over time.
I think they're going to leak it out and give it out. So anyone who's skeptical of Obama gets blasted, and then anything he does will be accepted as true and truth.
And
there'll be no room for any skepticism after they release it of any kind about any of his policies, is what they're trying to do. This is a very cynical game they're playing, and it's going to backfire on them unless they do so very quickly. This is my advice to the administration, is release the picture right away. You know, you owe it to the American people. Theoretically, you still work for us, you know. Yeah, good luck. That went out with the when did that go out? They worked for us. Yeah. Government works for the people. 1-800-449-8255. Let's see what's... You know, there's an interesting article about bin Laden by Amir Tahiri in the New York Post. He's an excellent columnist. I want to read you a paragraph from what he wrote. Evil reign collapsed years before he fell. And he says the physical demise of Osama bin Laden comes long after the death of the ideology promoted for decades. And he goes on. I'm not going to read the whole story because it's boring to listen to a talk show's read someone else's writings. But he said, yes, the group has sleeper cells. And he said, yes, Al-Qaeda is bound to fade away, as of all terrorist organizations in history, though this will take some time. Meanwhile, the major democracy should throw their support behind the Arab Spring and help it find its way to a future free of both despotism and Islamic terrorism. That's all well and good, but you're not going to have an Arab Spring with the Muslim Brotherhood behind it. That's all I can tell you. That's all. Remember the coal? Remember Kenya? Remember Somalia 93? Remember the WTC 93? It was all Al-Qaeda, all Osama bin Laden. Okay, so we have a lot to talk about. New York, Tom, WOR, go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, great show. I really love hearing you. Hey, one comment I had was I was listening to the news media talking about they don't want to release this photo of Obama's head blown off or whatever, right?
Yes.
Well, I was thinking back to myself. They showed that Bird kid get his head chopped off, and they showed those other photojournalists who were strung up, and they showed their mutilated bodies all over the magazines and stuff. So I'm thinking to myself,
the sensitive media that puts out movies that are the most violent pornographic images imaginable are suddenly worried about releasing a violent photograph?
Exactly, Mike. That's my point. I was like, are these...
Are they kidding?
Exactly.
Who are they kidding? Who are they talking to with that violent photo? Who's going to die from it? What, the liberals are going to have to find therapy for the students who look in the newspaper? This is utter nonsense. They're playing with us again to try and make it into another Bertha thing.
And right, I agree with that woman who called earlier that, you know, the American people are smarter than this, and they're not going to fall for this phony baloney.
No, it's starting to backfire on Obama now. His cynicism and his inexperience is showing once again. Do you know that?
Yeah.
The way they are handling the post-killing of Osama bin Laden, let's take it on the face that he was killed by the SEALs. The way they are handling the post-killing of Osama bin Laden shows inexperience, confusion, and schizophrenia. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
All right, look, now listen to this now. Now, I'm sorry to tell you, this is getting nuttier. I just came went to the Fox News site, okay? Bin Laden appeared to be reaching for a weapon with a fatal shot. So now you read on. Listen to this. Other details about Laden's compound suggest the Al-Qaeda figurehead felt relatively secure in his posh surroundings. The cinder block, you know, junk house there. Now listen to this. There were no guards on site, according to a senior U.S. official. Are you kidding me? The average Hollywood harlot has two hulking guards, and the world's number one terrorist had no guards? Something doesn't make sense, I'm starting to tell you. They're bungling it. They're bungling this story. He apparently had no interest in surrendering when the CIA-led Navy SEALs team did arrive for their capture-or-kill mission, the result of years of intelligence gathering and special training. The team encountered resistance throughout the operation, Carney said. That's the bumbler who couldn't read the script properly. He had no guards? Do you believe this? Chicago, Beth, welcome to the program. What do you mean he had no guards? Do you believe that?
No, I don't believe that. And I just wonder, you know, you were wondering why he might not have a weapon. And one of the things I was thinking is maybe we had someone on the inside that made sure that he did not have a weapon when they landed.
Why would a guy agree to have no weapon who's a terrorist?
Well, I'm just saying, if we had someone on the inside, someone that was I don't want to use the word double agent, that sounds silly, but, you know, someone who was on our side was on the inside of his house and made sure at that time the weapon he would normally have wasn't in the room with him.
Well, I think the Obama administration is playing the American people and the world for suckers, frankly, and it's going to boomerang on them. They can only play this game for so long until people say something's because the longer they go on with this, the more the questions are going to grow. And now the bungling is starting with the storyline. He had no guards. He had no gun. It's making the SEALs look bad. That's the part I don't like about it. They broken and killed innocent men, women, and children, you're saying now? That's what we're starting to hear? So what, the SEALs should be brought before The Hague for their dastardly act? Terrible. Just terrible what's going on here. New York, WOR, here comes the conspiracist, Eric, on the Savage Nation. Eric, go ahead, please.
First of all, let me just, I guess, preface anything I'm saying by, like, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a young American who doesn't really follow politics as much as he should, just like everybody else. But still, I mean, like you said, what we're being told does not make sense. If you think about
all right.
It...
Right, let me say this. I'm an older guy who does follow politics, and I'm extremely skeptical of the story.
Oh, exactly. I mean, anybody who has half a brain can understand, like, a timeline that doesn't make sense. Like you said, no gun, like, didn't know what was going on with all of that. And I think everything that I've been told so far is that it was a straight kill mission. How does that make sense from, I guess, a political standpoint to not try to capture the person that we can get the most information out of to try to prevent anything happening?
Yeah.
On American
right.
soil.
The SEALs could have handcuffed him and taken him back to Langley for an interrogation and paraded him before the world to see. That would have been a great trophy.
Yeah, I mean,
of course they could have captured him.
If somebody
of course
else,
they could have. He had no gun and no guards, and they had to kill him. Why?
I mean, that just doesn't make sense.
Maybe they wanted to silence him. Did you want to go into that? Maybe they wanted to silence him. Did you ever think of that? You want to turn this whole thing around? I'm afraid to do it. I told you that there's a part of me that's a novelist, and I could turn this novel into another story altogether. Maybe Osama bin Laden was about to rat out the administration or the Bush administration on something, and they wanted to snuff him. You want to play that game?
Really? I mean, what I hope happened was, I mean, hopefully they could go in there, capture him. Hopefully, I mean, what I would like to have happened is maybe he's alive right now being tortured and interrogated, you know, not that that's right, but they have to say that he's dead. They have no body to prove. They have to say that they gave him a Muslim burial and all that to try to appease his side to prevent future blowback. I mean, try to reduce it as much as possible.
You mean, but he's actually strapped to a chair in a room and he has to look at Dianne Feinstein's face?
Yeah, I'm hoping something. I mean, to get no...
And Barbara Box is yelling at him, screaming, if you don't give it up, I'll tell you what's going to happen.
Exactly.
I kind of doubt it. But you're a young man who's not political, and you're asking questions. So something's wrong again with the picture. I tell you, people are starting to doubt Obama on this. That's what's happening here. They've got to make this fast. I don't believe some of the story at this point. And I'd like the government to come up front as much as they can and release the pictures or the video right now. They got to do it sooner rather than later. Sacramento, Dave, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, yes. My theory is that I think the helicopter, since there's that training place right next to him, I think the helicopters inured him to the sound. And when our guys figured that out and they just came swooping in, but before he knew it.
Yeah, but wait a minute. One of them crashed on the compound. So I would say that at that point, had he had a weapon, which we assume the world's leading terrorist would have? When the helicopter crashed on his roof, would you think that Santa would have reached for his gun?
I think there were weapons there. He just didn't get them in time. I mean, he was.
Wait a minute. I said to you, every dentist that I know has a gun next to his bed here in California. Liberal, conservative, left, right, center, gay, straight, black, white. Everyone I know has a gun in California.
Yeah.
And you're telling me Osama bin Laden was, what, an anti-gun guy?
Yeah, I think there were weapons there. They just didn't grab him in time. He was probably asleep.
How could they not grab him in time? There was a firefight, according to the storyline, on the first floor of the compound. What was he doing?
Well, I understand.
Watching Oprah? What was he watching, Oprah? A rerun of Oprah?
Yeah. You know,
He was dozing off watching Oprah Winfrey on a satellite feed, and he didn't hear what was going on down below because he was leading such a peaceful life with his 35 wives and 15,000 children. This is amazing to me. Something's wrong here. Green Bay John, fire away. You're next on the Savage Nation. Go ahead.
Maybe what they're trying to do is the CIA was just trying to clean up their mistakes that they made years ago by training them to come after us.
I'm missing something. I cover up which mistakes?
Well, I could have sworn that we taught the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda's how to fight against the Russians. And
Going back to when they were Mujahideen fighting the Russians, and we gave them Stinger missiles. Then, after the Russians were defeated, they became our enemy, okay? So what does that have to do with this story? I'm not following you.
Well, they're all trying to say, well, the CIA ran this whole operation and we killed them. And maybe they're aware trying to silence them because he had more stuff to give to the American public. You don't want to.
Oh, you mean Osama bin Laden had something to release to the American public and they didn't want it to come out? Well, that's a good conspiracy theory. So that confirms that he was killed. But now we have to ask why he was killed and not taken alive. Because this goes against everything Obama has stood for to this date. Obama has stood for the academic egghead view of warfare and of capturing the enemy. Bring him back to justice. Try him in New York. Okay? Give him a fair trial. Bring him to justice. All of a sudden, shoot him in the head in front of his children?
Well, you know, the whole Obama administration is nothing but a bunch of publics being run by higher corporation. I mean,
well, okay, let's not go there. We know. Well, with that we know. All administrations are a mix of influences run by various and sundry forces. That's a given. So there's an awful lot of story, a lot in this story that's starting to create disturbing questions in the minds of millions of people around the world. Anyone with a brain is starting to ask questions now. A, why'd they kill him, not take him alive? B, why are you saying he had no gun? You know, one after the other. First there was a woman. Then there wasn't a woman. Then the woman threw herself at one of the SEALs and they shot her in the leg because they're such noblemen, they didn't kill her. That's, again, the Lone Ranger already. The American hero doesn't kill women and children. There were children in the room, but they scattered and ran out of the building. Here in the middle of machine gun fire, the children ran out of the room. And now that's the next one. Okay, 1-800-449-8255. All of these latest stories are up on michaelsavage.com. Well, at least Dick Cheney has been heard from. Play clip 16. This is good to hear. Let's hear Dick Cheney.
Clearly deserves credit for the success of the operation. If you look at it from the perspective of the president, he's got to make the basic judgment to tell the force to go execute, in this case, the raid, and wrestle with deciding, you know, is this good enough intelligence? Can we act on it? From what I can tell.
All right. Well, there's a man who knows. He shot one of his friends on a hunt in Texas, so he knows something about Dick Cheney knows something about shooting. He didn't take his. Thank God, you know what I'm saying? All right, Savage Nation, back in a minute.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, although the media has more or less moved on from the killing of the Hitler of our time, Osama bin Laden, and we'll talk about that, I want to go into what the Department of Defense is reporting actually happened at the OBL compound. Here it is. It's from White. It's a paper read by the press spokesmouth, Carney. And here's what he said. On orders of the president, a small U.S. team assaulted a secure compound in an affluent suburb of Islamabad to capture and kill Osama bin Laden. The raid was conducted with U.S. military, blah, blah, blah. We know about that. Two helicopters. In addition to the bin Laden family, two other families resided in the compound. One family on the first floor and one family in a second building. One, a SEAL team, began the operation on the first floor and worked their way to the third floor. A second team cleared the separate building. That means they killed everyone in it. On the first floor of bin Laden's building, two al-Qaeda couriers were killed, along with a woman who was killed in crossfire. Bin Laden and his family were found on the second and third floor of the building. There was concern that bin Laden would oppose the capture operation, and indeed he resisted. In the room with bin Laden, a woman, one of bin Laden's wife, rushed the U.S. assaulter and was shot in the leg but not killed. Bin Laden was then shot and killed. He was not armed. Following the firefight, the non-combatants were moved to a safe location as a damaged helicopter was detonated. The team departed the scene via helicopter to the USS Carl Vinson in the North Arabian Sea. Aboard the USS Carl Vinson, the burial of Hitler bin Laden was done in conformance with Islamic precepts and practices. Isn't that nice? The deceased body was washed and then placed in a white sheet. The body was placed in a weighted bag. A military officer read prepared religious remarks, which were translated into Arabic by a native speaker. After the prayers were complete, the body was placed on a prepared flatboard, tipped up, and the deceased body eased into the sea. That's the entire Department of Defense report. Now let's move on to why the media has moved on, more or less. I mean, they're still talking about it, but not as much. You know, less than 48 hours after the most important military victory for the United States in many years, the assassination of Osama bin Laden, already the media is moving on. You know, scanning the cable news channels today, you can see them already switching to stories on celebrity starlets who threw up on their shoes, baseball goofs, personal finance. Bin Laden, the war on radical Islam, the amazing, amazing performance of the Navy SEALs, and the threat that is still posed to America by radical Islam is being kind of pushed into the background. Now, why is this happening? Why is the media ever so eager to... Why is the media ever the eager supplicant to Obama, moving past Obama's greatest achievement so quickly? Huh? Could it be that the American public reacted with such jubilance, such raw triumph at the news, that the media became frightened? Did they view America's elation as too nationalistic, too jingoistic? Were the vermin in the media worried that America, once awakened in the same way they were awakened to 9/11, would see the true threat of radical Islam and take more action than they were willing to stomach? Or demand that no more immigrants come in from the Middle East? Is that possible? There's another possibility. And that's that the media realized there were so many stories about the death of Osama bin Laden that they weren't able to sell their usual stream of movies, books, and pharmaceutical drugs. You see, when America's thinking about the death of bin Laden and is inspired with patriotism, it's very hard to sell a movie about an idiot chasing after a slut when America's swelling with national pride. It's difficult to sell it on some get-rich-quick scheme. And when America's called on to its when America's called to its better self, it's very hard to sell drugs that cast people into mental narcolepsy. The media wants us to be stupid, subdued, depressed, and distracted. And so a news cycle which highlights victory cannot be allowed to last long. Well, whatever the reason, the media has declared a more or less end to our national celebration. Now let's go to my website, michaelsavage.com, Borders, Language, and Culture, home of the Savage Nation, and see what's made it to the headlines. From the Washington Times, In Death, Bin Laden Still the Root of Anxiety. It's an interesting article by Jennifer Harper, who interviewed me, and I'll read you a paragraph or two. She interviewed me, and I said, he was the Adolf Hitler of our time. He was the boogeyman. He was the incarnation of pure evil, killing Muslims, Christians, Jews, Hindus, and agnostics indiscriminately. He was a mass murderer who couched his madness in a religion, talk radio host Michael Savage told the Washington Times. All of the other quotes are so tepid, it's hard for me to read them. Here's Tom Ridge, the nation's first Homeland Security Secretary. Listen to this, Vanilla. Quote, as we mark this victory, we know that as one chapter closes, more chapters will be written. A flawed ideology did not die with one man. But just as surely as the fight will continue, so will our determination. We remain just as we were nearly 10 years ago, joined together and joined in the task. Tom Ridge, not one word about Islam. Not one word about radical Islam. Thank you, Tom. See the kind of rubbish that the people have turned off to? So, I can see why she quoted me. Honestly, it's not about me. But the fact of the matter is, the story needs much more an elaboration. And I'm sure it'll come over the next few thousand years. And from the Wall Street Journal, boost for Obama likely to be fleeting. From MSNBC, Pakistan accused of playing Bin Laden double game. From the New York Post, how Navy SEAL Team 6 took out Bin Laden. Bin Laden's son, worst is yet to come. View to kill, that's the picture of our team, the Obama team, in the war room, staring at the screen. And as you can see when you look at the picture on michaelsavage.com, the vice president, whatever his name is actually half awake. His head is tilted partially up. Today, the White House is discussing a release of the Bin Laden death photograph. Well, I can't wait. I hope it comes out this afternoon. The secret team that killed Bin Laden. How Bin Laden was hunted down. Inside the compound where Osama Bin Laden was killed. It was called a mansion the first day. Now it's a compound. Looks like a third world, you know, death trap. Bin Laden's burial at sea questioned by Islamic scholars. Blah, blah, blah. They're concerned that it was a violation of Islamic tradition. I'd ask the scholars, what about his blowing up innocent people? Was that a violation of Islamic tradition? What else do we have on the site? Hamas leader condemns killing of Bin Laden. Go do business with them. Man struck twice by lightning. The war of the egghead academics. White trash in the news. It's an interesting one. It's about all your favorite Caucasian actors and actresses and their cavorts in Hollywood. I've summarized it in one box, white trash in the news. Meanwhile, at Ground Zero, take a look at the picture that was taken by a friend of mine on the site. And finally, Michael Savage's ratings are soaring. Take a look at them. They're in black and white for you doubting Thomas's. Others may be down, but I am up, up, up. What else is in the news? Well, it'll come out all day today, you know. Obama's rating spike post Bin Laden. And a poll finds. Let's go to the local San Francisco newspaper, see what they say. Let's see. The Pew Research Center for the People and the Press, a left-wing, hack site. His ratings went up. It spiked. Mm-hmm. Ooh. Well, that's really good. That really went up. Looking at the latest news on Fox News, how we got him, details emerge. It's already the same. How he lived without fear of being captured. President's 2012 hopes remain tied to economy. Yeah, right. With Bin Laden gone, who tops the FBI wanted list? Gee, I wonder who that is. Probably Rush Limbaugh. On the president's wanted list. I hope not. Let's see which slut has fallen down in coming out of rehab. Because that's the important stuff for Fox News, is who's in and out of rehab, right? Thank God we haven't had to look at that actor, the torpedo, the human torpedo, for a few days.
Thank God.
We forgot him, but I think he's back on Fox News. Ah, here's one. Portugal bailout to cover three-year period, official says. They're bailing out Portugal. Can you believe this in the middle of all of this? International bailout that will cover a three-year period. Prime Minister José Sócrates, I'm not making up the name, whose government quit last month but is running the country, you hear? Says Portugal got a good deal after more than 2 weeks of negotiations with the IMF, the European Central Bank, and the European Commission. Isn't that nice? Portugal is the third member of the 17-nation Eurozone after Greece and Ireland needing a bailout due to crippling debts. Who's paying for it? the hardworking people of Germany and France are paying for the deadbeats coming to a neighborhood near you? Let's hope not. Never forget that although we had a wonderful victory as a result of the brave SEALs, this country is still bankrupt. All this and more coming up right here on the Savage Nation. You know, we should talk about Lincoln one day. I would like to spend an entire show about how Lincoln was reinvented by so many different people for their own personal reasons. We keep hearing the Civil War was fought to free the slaves. False. Lincoln said when the war, before the war went really badly, that he would rather see no slaves freed if he could keep the republic together, the nation together. He'd rather not flee. If he could not free one slave, he wouldn't free one slave, he said, if he could keep the country together by not freeing the slaves. Do you know that? He only latched on to the slavery issue relatively late in the Civil War in order to rile up the Eastern liberal establishment and turn it into a moral issue rather than the economic war that it actually was. It was taxation without representation. The South was exporting cotton to Europe. Europe was totally dependent upon cotton the way we're dependent upon oil right now. And, of course, the North was taxing the cotton without growing the cotton. And it was a war over taxation and revenue as much as it was over anything else. This whole issue of Lincoln freeing the slaves is part of the storybook mythology that arose around it. Certainly we're glad the slaves were freed, but let's not turn Lincoln into a saint because he wasn't, by the way. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Hi, this is Dr. Savage, your lifestyle coach here. We're going to shift away from politics for the moment and go to what's really important, and that's the personal. If you have a personal question, a lifestyle question, a life coach question that I can help you with, just give us a call at 1-800-449-8255. Remember, people are paying $500 an hour and more for this kind of advice. So if you're lucky enough to get through the call screener and get onto the Savage Nation, you're going to earn some of the best advice you've ever heard right here on the Dr. Savage Lifestyle segment. It is the Savage. No medical calls, please. I'm not going to give any medical advice because A, I'm not a medical doctor, and B, there's too much liability, and C, it's not my problem. No, I mean, call a doctor for that kind of stuff, but I'll deal with the other stuff because I think politics is great. And by the way, every time you ask me a lifestyle question, right, my answers are usually very political because I'm a very political person. I think that virtually everything is political. I can't think of virtually any aspect of a person's life that isn't political in some way. Let's start with the food you eat. If you ask me what I had for dinner and where I ate it, it would eventually devolve or actually evolve or revert to a discussion of politics. Whether it's the politics of the where the shrimp came from, the fishing grounds, import quotas on shrimp, that kind of thing. So I'm a political animal. In that regard, everything is seen through a political eye. So when I say to you, I'm going to do lifestyle, don't worry about it so much. It's going to turn right back onto the political situation. Let's begin in Missouri. See, as an ex-New Yorker, I never understood why it's to some it's Missouri and to some Missouri. But I'm going to try the political correctness thing. Francesca from Missouri, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
For you.
Yes. What is it?
I am engaged to somebody who was married for 30 years. And I just wanted your opinion on how I'm supposed to stay out of what his life was before and establish our life separate from that, meaning, you know, he's got kids that are grown.
There's only one answer to that question. The answer is Viagra.
No, that's all good. That's the beauty. That department is...
No, well, I'm just saying, if you can keep the guy focused on that, all the rest of it will fall in place.
Oh, trust me. I've never been with... I mean, I was with somebody... I'm 35. He's 54. And he is the best I've ever been with. There's no Viagra involved, and he's the happiest. We both are, but it's the outside influences.
What do you mean? The ex-wife keeps trying to tamper with the relationship?
Well, no, not the relationship, but it's always something. The kid, you know, who's 20 and still at home.
Well, but he's a father. Look, this is the problem, Francesca. A man who's older than you, who has a grown family, is still a father. He's going to want to take care of his children, and you can't be so possessive that you don't want to let him even have a relationship with his own children. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I guess I never had.
Isn't it you who is somewhat possessive here? What is your intent, to cut him off from all relationships with his children?
Absolutely not. No.
Well, but that's what's going to happen. If he starts to get that feeling, he's going to get a little, you know, move away from you.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen.
All right, so what I say is, you know, let the guy, you know, give him a wide range here. He's got to relate to the children. He's probably still has a relationship with the ex-wife, financial or some other way, doesn't he?
Well, yes. I mean, after 30 years, how can you not?
Well, all right. So you're accepting of the fact that, what, they still have business interests together?
Business interests, no. No.
But what does he talk to her about?
Well, if the daughter and her get in an argument, because the 20-year-old daughter still lives there, so, you know, she'll call him up and say, I'm having issues with her, so, you know, maybe you can talk to her.
Okay, so the mother calls the dishes with the daughter, so they're using the child to keep him in contact with him. You got to expect this. He was a married man. He can't cut them off and throw them away. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Eric Stackelback is a columnist. He's here today to talk about how the government is deceiving you about the next terrorist attack. Eric, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, always great to be here. Thanks for having me.
In your opinion, what does the death of Osama bin Laden mean for the United States?
Well, Michael, first of all, look, the death of Osama bin Laden, long overdue, is a great thing. It stirred long dormant patriotic feelings among many Americans. It's a good thing overall, but look, I hate to rain on everyone's parade, but in the grand scheme of things, Al-Qaeda and this global jihadist movement is much broader than one man. Actually, it's much broader than one group. Look, we have seen a shift, as I lay out in the book, Michael, and as we've discussed, from these large-scale Al-Qaeda-type attacks to smaller-scale attacks, Fort Hood, Times Square, the underwear bomber. So I think you'll see more of a shift. You'll see that continue in the wake of bin Laden's death. You're going to see retaliatory attacks. You're going to see attempts in America, especially in Europe, you will see retaliatory attacks, I believe. That's the short term. I think another guy to keep an eye on is Anwar al-Awlaki. Michael, you and I have discussed him many times. I think he may become increasingly influential. He's the leader of Al-Qaeda in Yemen, American-born, young, charismatic, was educated in America, fluent in English. I can tell you, for a young, radicalized, say, Pakistani Muslim American kid in New York City, they don't have posters of Osama bin Laden on their wall. They have the DVDs and CDs of Anwar al-Awlaki. He is the guy who was galvanizing young radical Muslims around the world, especially in the West, because he breaks down that language barrier. He's fluent in English. So I look for him to rise in prominence. But another thing to keep in mind here, Michael, I see Iran. Iran right now, I believe, is smiling at bin Laden's death, in a sense, in that they are now the undisputed leaders of the global jihad. They are now carrying the mantle for the radical Islamic world, officially in their eyes. And there's events that are going to unfold very soon in the Middle East that are going to make us forget all about the Afghan-Pakistan theater, at least momentarily, because Iran, Michael, as we've laid out here on the show several times, they believe that the end times are at hand. They believe they can usher in the return of the Islamic Messiah if only they drop a nuke on Tel Aviv. They truly, truly believe this stuff, and they're shaping policy around it, and they're gearing up for something big, and they're gearing up soon. So that's the next phase we have coming. And by the way, this administration and President Obama will get many accolades for taking out bin Laden. And hey, look, bravo. It was a bold operation, without a doubt. It's about the only thing he's done, Michael, in 2.5 years that I agree with on a foreign policy realm, and basically in every realm of his presidency. But look, when it comes, this is a much broader fight than just al-Qaeda. This administration has tunnel vision in this war against global jihad. They think if you take out al-Qaeda, the war on radical Islam is over. I've heard some more left-leaning terrorism analyst on CNN say the war on terror is over now that bin Laden is dead. This is madness. Not only will al-Qaeda, not only is it morphing into a more loosely affiliated group worldwide with these smaller-scale chip-away attacks like we saw at Fort Hood, but you have Hezbollah thriving. You have the Muslim Brotherhood thriving. You have Iran ready to carry the torch for the jihadist world. This threat is so much more pervasive than al-Qaeda, and as I lay out in the book, Michael, in really, I think, alarming detail, the Obama administration not only fails, refuses to acknowledge the threat, this pervasive threat. They know it's there. They refuse to acknowledge it. And, Michael, they can't even identify who is blowing us up. It's not violent extremists. It's Islamic terrorists. And I've interviewed Islamic terrorists face-to-face who have told me, hey, it's not poverty that motivates us. It's not the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that motivates us. It's Islamist ideology. That's what motivates us. The Obama administration will not acknowledge that. And that's why they gave Osama bin Laden a proper Islamic burial at sea.
Well, what's really changed for Islamic terrorists since 9/11?
Michael, here's the big thing, which I outline in my book, The Terrorist Next Door. Al-Qaeda has shifted their tactics. It's been a concerted effort. Now, 9/11, they made history. It was a history-altering attack. But since 9/11, they haven't been able to equal that type of carnage. Look, they want to hijack airplanes. They want to acquire nuclear weapons. They want to set off a dirty bomb in a major American city. They set the bar so high on 9/11, and they want to top it. But they haven't been able to do it, Michael, thank God, in the past 10 years. So now they are shifting tactics. Never forget, they're trying to top 9/11. They continue to plan and plot every day to pull off a bigger attack on American soil. But in the meantime, they are shifting tactics, Michael, to something I call the chip-away strategy. Now, what is that? The chip-away strategy is a series of smaller-scale attacks. Think Fort Hood. Think the underwear bomber. Think the attempted Times Square bombing last year. Think Mumbai in India in 2008, where 10 well-armed young jihadists fanned out across a major city and wreaked complete havoc, killed 150 people, shut down a city of 10 million, and dominated news headlines for days. Now, Michael, this was a cheap, it was inexpensive, it was easy to pull off in the grand scheme of things, didn't take years and years of planning like 9/11 did. Self-starters, lone wolves, could easily carry out these types of smaller-scale attacks, and that's why al-Qaeda is shifting. I call it the chip-away strategy, Michael, because if you chip away, these attacks, a series, a sustained effort of these small-scale attacks, could chip away at a country's psyche, at a country's economy, at a country's security, while in the meantime, al-Qaeda continues to plot the big one. I lay it out in the book, and it's a strategy, Michael, that the Obama administration has refused to recognize, to acknowledge this al-Qaeda shift in tactics, which al-Qaeda's leaders have endorsed, this chip-away strategy. The Obama administration, Michael, just continues to tell us it's all a bunch of isolated extremists. Move along, nothing to see here.
What part of the country do you think is most vulnerable to an attack?
Michael, I think one of the most stunning revelations in this book that's really going to shock people is when you think of Islamic terrorism, you think of large cities. Here in America, you think, hey, what are the cities, the big cities with large immigrant populations? New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, Philadelphia. You're not thinking of the heartland.
You're not thinking of the Bible Belt. But over the past 10 years, Michael, in the course of my investigations, I find myself again and again turning up in places like Murfreesboro, Tennessee, like Columbus, Ohio, the heartland, the very heartland of America. Radical Islam is now making significant inroads, especially in the South. In the book, I call it Southern Inhospitality. They're making great inroads, Michael. They're building multi-million dollar mega mosques in the South, in the Midwest, in the Dust Belt, in the Rust Belt. And this is a concerted, concentrated effort by the Islamic Jihadist, by Muslim Brotherhood linked groups with Saudi money. They know exactly what they're doing. They are purposely, in their view, taking the fight, taking Islam into the heart of infidel land. It doesn't get any more Judeo-Christian than the Bible Belt, Tennessee. But that's what they're doing. That's what Islamic radicals are doing now. They're taking the fight right to the American people. They're saying Islam, Sharia, is here to stay. So many cases I've investigated, Michael, that take me to the most unlikely places right here in America over the past few years. And that's not even to mention the flood of Muslim refugees coming here by the tens of thousands from hostile countries like Somalia. In the book, I call it Black Hawk Now.
Well, I've used the phrase myself, but what do you mean when you say Israel is the canary in the coal mine?
Michael, there's an old saying in the radical Islamic world. First the Saturday people, then the Sunday people. The Saturday people are the Jews. The Sunday people are the Christians. In the book, this chapter, I call it First They Came for the Jews. That's a chapter that was near and dear to my heart, Michael, with everything that's been going on with the state of Israel under assault, not only by its Islamic radical enemies, but this administration, the Obama administration, laying the fault of all the unrest in the Middle East essentially at Israel's feet. Here's the deal. If Israel goes down, we all go down. Israel is the first line of defense for Western civilization. And there's a reason that countries like Iran call Israel the little Satan and America the great Satan. Israel is only the first step. Once Israel is eradicated, which they fully intend to do, America, the great Satan, will be the ultimate prize. America and the West are the ultimate prize for Islamic jihadists. Israel is something that's near and dear to their heart in terms of something they want to destroy because it's in their midst. It's in the heart of the Middle East. But once Israel's gone, America is in the crosshairs. The Obama administration does not seem to understand this. First the Saturday people, then the Sunday people. If you blame Islamic Jihad on Israel, this is a farcical claim. Quick historical review, Michael. Since Islam roared out of the Arabian Peninsula in the year 632 AD, from that point up until 1948, when the state of Israel was miraculously reestablished, during that period, we had wave after wave of Islamic Jihad against the West. Sicily was conquered. Spain was conquered. Greece was conquered. Jihadists got to the gates of Vienna twice during that period where the state of Israel did not even officially exist. Was that also the Jews' fault? Was that also Israel's fault? I don't think so. We need to be truthful. We need to be honest about the enemy. It's not poverty that causes terrorism. It's not Israel that causes terrorism. It is Islamist ideology. Or, as I put it in the book, Michael, it's the ideology, stupid.
Eric, thank you again for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks again. Always a pleasure. And again, the book is called The Terrorist Next Door, How the Government is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat. It's on sale everywhere. Thanks again.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
I quoted, if you want to make an omelet, you have to be willing to break a few eggs. It was Lenin who said it, not Marx. And it came about when one of Lenin's fellow Bolsheviks asked him to justify the growing number of atrocities they were committing in the name of a socialist future. And Lenin said, oh, well, if you want to make an omelet, you have to be willing to break a few eggs. My suspicion is that as a pan-Leninist, Mr. Obama is willing to break a few eggs to make the new omelet called the New World Order in the name of a socialist revolution. I'm going to quote somebody right now. Class struggle, he wrote, class struggle. Classes struggle. Some classes triumph, others are eliminated. Such is history. Such is the history of civilization for thousands of years. Chairman Mao Tse-tung. Here's another quote from Chairman Mao, a favorite of the hippie generation. Changes in society are due chiefly to the development of the internal contradictions in society. That is the contradiction between the productive forces and the relations of production, the contradiction between classes and the contradiction between the old and the new. It is the development of these contradictions that pushes society forward and gives the impetus for the supersession of the old society by the new. In class society, everyone lives as a member of a particular class, and every kind of thinking without exception is stamped with the brand of a class. This is all out of quotations from Chairman Mao Tse-tung. You're watching nothing less than a revolution occurring, but instead of occurring over a period of weeks or months, it happened virtually overnight with a little help from the American media. California, Chicago, Boston, Massachusetts, Detroit, wherever the Savage Nation is heard on all the 300 and some odd affiliates, the millions of listeners, you're all available to call the show right now, 1-800-449-8255, Florida.
Dr. Savage, you said a while ago, and you posed the question of why Islam is rearing its ugly head, and I do have an illustration.
Let me correct what you just said. I never said why is Islam rearing its ugly head. I said that Mubarak is a Muslim. I said, why is radical Islam rearing its ugly head? I didn't say Islam. There's a huge difference.
Okay, well, I'll say Islam. You say radical Islam, but the reason is...
Yeah, well, say what you say. Don't tell me what I said and then try to create more trouble for me, because not all of Islam is the same. Mubarak is not the same as the Muslim Brotherhood. He's been fighting them all his life. So how can you say it's all the same? That's like saying all Americans are the same.
Okay, well, the reason I say that is simply because America has ceased to become a superpower. And let me give you an illustration. You know, the Bible says in Ecclesiastes 1:9 that...
Well, we know that America is not a superpower, not because we aren't a superpower, but because we don't have a superpower leader. That's the reason. Of course, we're still a superpower. But we have Obama as the commander-in-chief, which unto itself is a nightmare. And then we have the Stepford Wives in the form of Robert Gates, or Gates of the Defense Secretary, and Mullen, the astonishing Stepford Wife, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They both frighten me because they don't seem to have any real military experience, and they don't seem to be on the side of the fighting man. I got that the genome thing back. What a ripoff. I sent the saliva in for $399. What a ripoff this is. I could read the company's name, but I don't really need to, you know, bash the company. I wouldn't recommend that you spit in the jar and send in $400 to find out what you're going to die from. I sent my saliva sample, and it took 3 months to get my genotyping analysis back. Folks, I have a PhD from the University of California in epidemiology and nutrition. I mean, I couldn't make heads or tails of it. Told me that you have a statistical chance of not getting breast cancer. That was what I got out of it. You have a statistical chance of not getting breast cancer, I learned. That was very important for $400. So I figured, all right, so let's see who I come from. I figured maybe it'll explain why I don't like the heat. Maybe I derive from Finns or somewhere, like Laplanders. You know, as a kid, I was always drawn to, like, northern Finland. I always liked, like, the yak. I liked the yak as an animal. And I liked the huts they lived in. I liked the idea of them on the ice, something near the Eskimo, but not exactly Eskimos. I never wanted to be an Eskimo. I wanted to be near the Eskimos. I liked the idea of the cold, dark winter, but I like a city with electric lights. So I figured Helsinki would work. So I was hoping that when I got the analysis back, it would say that you have some drop of Finnish blood, that at some point a Finnish warrior came into the village and, you know, had his way with one of your female ancestors, and that explains why you hate Florida. It didn't happen, though. I got it back, and my genotyping analysis kit came back, and there's nothing in it. I'm still searching for any bit of information. It says you have a statistical chance of not getting breast cancer, And I looked at other illnesses. It says you have a statistical chance of not getting this, but you have a high probability of getting that. My mother-in-law could have told me the same thing based upon what happened in the family. Who are these people fooling? And by the way, I'm going to look into it a little bit more. All I can say to you is don't go for that genotype thing on the web with where you put saliva in a jar and sit. You sit and wait like you are not going to die from you. It doesn't come back like that. And trust me, I know statistics well enough to know what probability is. You have a 1.2 chance of not getting breast cancer. But you have a 0.8 chance of getting colorectal experiences after taking vitamins. What does this mean? Please explain it to me. Who were my ancestors? Then you look at the bottom. You got the stalkers already on the page. ME90305-0602 wants to meet you. Already a stalker found that your blood type, your spit matched his spit already. He's looking to meet you. Are you crazy? Am I going to send my data to some lunatic who wants to meet me because of saliva in a jar? You know, this is getting crazier by the day. I personally think it's a government plot to get your genome on file so they can use it against you. Forget about iris technology. I think this is the government wanting to get your spit on file. So here we are. I'm glad that I have a forum and I have a microphone and I can, you know, tell you like it is the way I see it.
Savage.